Shut up and sit down.
All right. Hello and welcome to episode 77 of Geek Grills, a podcast in which geeky women and sometimes guests gather to record topical conversation and then offer it to the masses. The Geek Grills podcast is supported solely by our patrons. You can find us on www.patreon.com/grills. I'm Linda, and I'm here with my co-host, September, also known as 9 of 12.
Hi.
And the Jen.
Hey.
And today we have three guests. We've got Abby.
Hello.
Murphy.
Yo.
And Shanna.
Hello there.
All of them are home brewers, so they make the alcohols. And we are very excited to have them on with us as we're going to talk about home brewing and all that sort of jazz and things that come along with that. We've got some brews of our own to enjoy while we're chatting, so here we go. So,
cheers,
Jen,
everyone.
Hey.
What have you been up to this week?
So, apparently it's women and sometimes guests. This time it's women and sometimes copious guests together. So, I have had a really a long week of playing Monster Hunter. Hours and hours of Monster Hunter. It is unhealthy. No, it's not unhealthy. It's just a lot of Monster Hunter. So last week I bought a used PlayStation 4 so that I could play this video game, and now I go and I killed monsters so that I can make their skins into armor, so that I can go kill bigger monsters, so I can make their skins into armor, so that I can then go kill even bigger monsters. It's literally, that's all it is. And it's delightful because after playing weeks of Civ 6, which is like the most complicated game of all time, it is kind of nice to just go and hit things with a big sword and then make armor out of it. So, yeah, that's been really fun. I did actually finish episode 2 of the first season of the Walking Dead Telltale game. I streamed it on Saturday. That game is traumatizing. I was very upset. I made a decision that I did not like. Makes me a little emotional.
Aww.
But yeah, it makes me very sad. I did, if you play the game, I did stuff in front of Clementine, and I was like, no, not Clementine. She is the only thing that is good in this world. It was really very sad. I also am halfway through Pilot X. We'll plug it here, but that's a book by Tom Merritt, and it's really worth a read. I'm enjoying it so far, and I'll have the link in the show notes, but I think it's tommerrittbooks.com is the easiest way to find all of his stuff. So I am upset that I haven't been able to watch it because we all know that I am a stupid fan for RuPaul's Drag Race. It is All Stars Season 3, and I have no idea how to watch it. I can't find a way to watch this damn show because it's on VH1 and PS4 View. So PlayStation View doesn't have it. I don't know. I need to, like, apparently talk to the cord. I'll have to hit up the cord cutters I know and be like, how do you watch VH1? Because that is the only thing I need. I don't need anything else. I just need to be able to watch it. And I started to watch a pirated version, and I just couldn't handle it. I was like, no, I need the real thing. This is horrible. So I hopefully will be figuring out how to do that. But I did start watching it, and I'm very excited. Anyway, it's been a busy week.
RuPaul's fun.
Yeah.
I know, you haven't brought up RuPaul in so long, Jen. It's like,
I know.
I probably didn't even know that you do that.
Yeah, oh, that's true. That's true. So if you listened back in the past, I rave about this. I get really into it. I actually have a website I participate in where it's like a football pool almost, where you pick like your top three queens and they earn points if they like cry or if they do things, whatever. And it's like whoever has the most points at the end, like you win. Like literally, it's hilarious that there's so much stuff into the show, but it's great. Like there's one where it's like talking about their tuck is like worth points. It's just hilarious. It's absolutely worth a good time. It's Pick Pete does it for RuPaul's Drag Race every season. But yeah, this is All Star Season 3, so some of my favorites are actually back in the mix for this one, so I'm super excited.
Cool. All right, Ember, how about you?
Sorry, producer problems. I just got a text message that our sound isn't working. But it is. So that's okay. His problem. Chris, if you're there, it's you, man, not us. what have I been up to? Okay. I played D&D last night, and that was really cool. I think I mentioned before I went, and they all had their dice in, like, sandwich baggies, and I just... It offended my nerd sensibility, so yesterday I went in and I dropped, like, 8 die pouches I had made of various sorts on the table for them all to
I think it's funny, for everybody listening, not on the live stream, when you said they had their dice in sandwich bags, I could see everybody's faces on the camera being like, what the fuck?
They spent a lot of money on dice. They don't deserve sandwich bags, for God's sake.
That's like going to a Magic the Gathering tournament and, like, not having sleeves on your cards and just, like, watching everybody cringe.
I had made Wonder Woman, which was snatched up by a guy who is a brewer here, actually. They're opening a little local Fourth Creek Brewery. It's opening soon. And I got to taste one of their flagship beers last night, which was cool at game. And he picked Wonder Woman. Apparently he has a thing for Wonder Woman. And
awesome.
One of our hosts picked the Adventure Time one, and the couple who hosts us for D&D, they're the one that's getting married and so crazy about Star Wars I was telling you about, Jen, that I, or Linda, I want to get a set of the things as a wedding present.
Yes.
So he snatched up the Star Wars one. I have Star Wars fabric left over from a skirt I made for Star Wars Day a few years ago when I made one. And what else? Oh, a little one with flames on it was left, like I gave Scott Johnson, but a little mini version. And I gave that to the DM. And then there's this Bang Pow. It matches my husband's, like, a comic booky fabric one. And this other guy who was brand new to D&D grabbed that. He was like, is it okay if I put this on Instagram? I'm like, yeah. And so I threw away that night, like, going, not only am I really happy that they were happy and they enjoyed them, but, like, several of them, it was their first dice pouch.
Aww.
You always remember your first dice pouch.
I still have my very first set of gamer dice in the pouch they came in. I was showing all my dice off to a friend the other day. It's like, I bought these 20 years ago.
Right. Oh, man, I don't even know where my first set of dice, because mine were actually... Mine were 10-siders, because I was all white. My first tabletopping was all White Wolf, so everything was 10-sided.
Oh, my God,
that
was your first one?
Oh, yeah, no, I was like...
Are you an accountant now?
Did you have the bag that had the symbols on it?
The funny thing is I did buy the dice sets when I was in high school. I was super into it. And, like, I lived in the middle of nowhere. Like, we were an hour and a half from a shopping mall. So it was me and my friends, and, like, I had no access to the outside universe. I actually did D&D for the first time until about 2 years ago.
One of the die that we had that I was able to show the group, and Rob and I, being the elder nerds, get to tell the story about
elder nerds. You guys have, like, a crest or something.
Modern gaming, like, the foresighters all do the thing that, you know, would seem to make sense, where the thing pointing up is what you rolled. But old ones, it's the bottom, the base. The
numbers
on the
bottom.
Same.
My favorite dice were like that.
New ones are all the other way. And the one I had was, like, an old school one, and it was, like, old, like... When you first bought D&D and it was a couple little paperback books and you had to rub the crayon on the die to fill in the colors D20, for numbers.
Because they were the double pen.
So, like, my 4 was one of those. And we're telling them about how you used to have to rub crayons to fill in the numbers.
That is old school.
I still have a few of those D20s around.
I've been playing Xenoblade 2. Which I love, but oh my God, it's a time sink.
I have no idea what that's like.
I love it's like playing an anime, because there's a lot of really good cutscenes, but it's like, I'm just going to do this one more thing. 40 minutes later, but I got to do the other thing. So,
why I haven't bought it.
Stuck me in this much in a while. I screwed up in the WoW Chronicle 3. Doesn't actually come out until March. So that was the Valentine's plan. Instead, I'll just budget some money and we'll buy stuff at the con this coming weekend.
Aww.
Which will be all right. He'll get to pick something.
Yeah.
I did play Worms WMD again with the part-time gamers, because the video and the audio podcast were bad and unpublishable. So we're just doing it again, but that's okay because I got to play that crazy, silly game again.
Excellent.
So that's what about this nerd this week.
What about you, Abby? What have you been up to?
Oh, boy. Well, actually, a rather fabulous plan was put together by my neighbor and several of our friends to vanish into the mountains, basically, you know, be in a creepy cabin in the woods and play board games all weekend.
Which was, oh, my God, that sounds, like, delightful.
It was amazing. yeah, no, we, like, tested out somebody's personal RPG that they were writing, and then... basically, whatever we wanted to play, I tried a new one called Heart of Crown that I really liked, that I'd never run across, and that's pretty much Anime Princess, the board game, or card game. Just so much fun to just barrel down hard on nerddom. And, you know, otherwise the mountains were gorgeous, and, you know, drink tea and look out over the mountains for that. So it got me ready for the week. I'm part of a group that's playing the Curse of Strahd module for Ravenloft and enjoying it thoroughly, mm-hmm. but we are down to the end. We are getting ready to have the big fight, you know, try and wreck Strahd's face or die trying. So after a year and almost 2 years of campaign, we are very excited by this. I think we're all going to die. I'm pretty positive. I'm positive I'm going to die anyway. I have fewer hit points than everyone. But I
yes, but you've amassed some amazing things in that game.
Yeah. And of course, since we were referencing earlier, I've taken the uncertain steps into playing Doki Doki Literature Club. Oh, wow. actually, I'm truly impressed, really. As much as I need a little bit of encouragement and a couple lights on, it's, one, I studied literature. So the references to actual literary critique, everything from, you know, very Byronic prose to Shel Silverstein as an example of subjective short prose and poetry is lovely. And then once, you know, things get more complicated, a lot of very serious discussions about mental health and, you know, the fact that people have lives around it, and it's not, you know, a trope. It's an actual thing that is part of people.
The person who wrote Sayori knows what depression looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, she's like, perfect. The second we started watching that, so I watched a playthrough of it, I was like, I know what's going to happen to her. I'm like,
It feels honest, and that's mm-hmm. really, I appreciate that. It's never a joke, you know, when it's the part of the story that is not supposed to be surreal. And then clearly we move on to something very surreal and cerebral, which I really like. It's very intelligent. I'm not done, and I'm parsing it in small bits, but I'm really pleased with what I'm seeing. So it's a wonderful game.
Awesome. How about you, Murphy?
Everybody else has a lot more gaming going on than me. Though, speaking of all going to be dying in a game, so I played in D&D. We're just 5th level characters, and we accidentally found a Drider in my last game. And it wasn't the Drider that took me out. It was our wizard. I'm the cleric. So, and the wizard just fireballed me, trying to get
the fire.
In. That bastard. So anyway, lately... I'm a crafter, so I've been finishing up some LARP commissions, making some armor and some sewing projects. Lots of tabletop, of course. D&D mostly. I play a little homebrew game locally as well. And every now and again, some raise into carpentry. There. I made a table.
That's like really awesome, though.
Like a table.
Last year I bought a power drill, and it was one of the most exciting moments of my adult life. Oh, because now I can drill shit. And like the world has opened to me. I've done so many projects now, it's insane. So like I made a house out of like this old lab table that somebody had, like a cabinet. You know, like I sawed it and drilled stuff, and I put my litter box in it. I made that thing.
That's awesome. I love that feeling of just like, here's a thing that didn't exist in the world. I did it with these hands.
Yeah. It is a wonderful feeling.
Very cool.
And what about you, Shanna? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been kind of having some downtime, or had some downtime due to my husband with some surgery. So we were kind of going back through the Xbox 360 game library because I had a lot of those. I'm trying to finish the DLC for Horizon Zero Dawn. I've already gone through the game once. I was doing it a hard New Game Plus with the core game, and that last blasted fight, it wasn't quite working out. So I said, hell of it, I'm going to go play the DLC, and then I'll finish this. I also play tabletop a lot, used to, but then I had a long dry spell. Just got back into doing one with some folks, and kind of enjoying it. I didn't plan to be the straight one in the group, really. I planned to be the practical joker, but someone else playing a kobold trapper beat me to that slot. So now I'm apparently the straight guy, cat person in my tabletop game. And they go, well, who's the responsible in the group? And all of them point at me. And I'm like, but, damn it. yeah.
Comedy doesn't work without a straight man, though.
Yeah, you need it. Otherwise, it just
doesn't. In fact, it's harder.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Other than that, I've actually slowly been starting to get excited about going to a Supernatural convention, which will be up in Nashville in April. I've been saving for this for like a year and a half, so I'm like, yay, I get to go do this, and better yet, I get to go do it with my sister, so even better.
That sounds awesome.
Cool.
All right. For me, last week, I'm doing my plushie update, you know, for MomoCon now. So, last week I showed Ember and Jen and Jackie, who we had on with us, a little preview of what I was making. If you recall, it was a little heart. I can now show you the finished product.
Yeah,
it is! It was a companion cube.
I want to hug that.
Wow.
You can hug the companion cube.
I thought that it might be. That was on my list of possibilities for what it was. That's when you had the heart.
So I made the companion cube, and then I also, because these are apparently really easy for me to make, I've made a bunch of Yoshis, all different colors.
Oh my goodness.
Easy for you to make, I'd be going, what the hell am I doing with that?
Yoshis.
All right, so tell me how I can give you money. Where's your Etsy store?
Just take my wallet, Linda. Just let me get it.
I actually share it with a couple of girls. It's called Chipper Cheaper. And there's, like, my stuff. There's, I think she does oil paintings, or it might be called watercolor. And then the other girl does some things. I need to make sure it's all updated. I haven't put those guys on there yet.
Well, send me that link, and I will put it in our show notes and also on our website.
For $5, I'll be your shill.
And then I got a new desk. You can't really see it from this angle because the camera is pointing at me. But it's only sort of a new desk because it's actually my old desk from high school / college that I left over at my parents' house when I moved out because we didn't have room for it. But the thing about the desk is that we went to my parents' house because they're moving, they're downsizing. So, and I had like a tiny little like kid's desk that was held together with two screws and some duct tape, not even joking. So we take the desk apart, pile all the pieces into the back of my car, bring it home, and we pile all the pieces into my office. And I'm like, okay, do you take pictures? And my husband kind of looks at me.
What are pictures? Why would we do such a silly thing?
And I was like, we got to put this back together now.
I can hear this in my head. This is happening.
So it took about like an hour and a half. And
it's way better than my table. I'm looking at it right now.
So, that took a little time.
It's got like compartments. Cabinet.
I can't really blame him because he was taking it apart with my dad. And my father has like the analytical like mind that can like just take things and be like, I've taken this apart and I know exactly how to put it back together. So he wasn't thinking about the fact that he wasn't going to be over here helping us put it back together, and thought that Matt could kind of just latch on to it and figure it out. So that wasn't it. That
was an adventure. Once it comes apart, it's never going back together again. That's my world. That's why if it doesn't move in one piece, dead to me. We're done with it.
But he always wins.
All I can hear in my head is just this pause and then Linda doing the little, huh. No.
Is kind of what happened.
Delightful.
Not gonna lie. So that's what I was up to this week. So now, with that, we can move on to the Geek Grapevine.
Okay. You know, I was about to start singing. I didn't know you had theme music for this thing. I had a really dumb song. Okay.
So whose is the Star Wars series?
Me. So I thought the most exciting thing this week was going to be that we actually got a Han Solo trailer, which, by the way, is that like the teaser trailer and not a real trailer? Why are teaser trailers now like 2 minutes long? I'm confused. I don't know. Anyway, it looks cool, but it's not really a trailer because there's no story. It's really just art, right? So I don't know. I'm confused. So Star Wars series coming out. We don't know when. No announcement on when. No details on that. But it is going to be written, or it's going to be done by the writers and producers of Game of Thrones. So it is going to be something outside of the Skywalker saga, completely separate from that, completely separate from the other three movie series that was already been talked about. That is completely different, but I love Star Wars universe, and I'm really excited. Also, if there's anybody that I can trust to like flesh out a world and make engaging visual media, it is the people that make one of my favorite television shows of all times. Of all time and forever, Game of Thrones. So that is, obviously, they haven't even put the last season up yet, so it's not coming until 2019, so that tells me that this is probably a ways out, but I still think that's incredibly exciting.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. I would watch it. I'd at least try it. I'd give it a go.
I will pay for it. I will spend money to go to the movies and see it.
So what I found two things. The first is apparently there's a new Super Mario movie coming out that is animated. Like they are actually partnering with the people that actually make the games.
Yeah, because when he first said Super Mario Bros. Movie, a chill went over me.
Going to say, did anybody else just have that visceral reaction and memories of those that already exist?
Like,
No.
First off, his last name's Video. It's not Mario. Okay.
No, like, literally in the article I found, they reference that. It's the people that have the bad reactions to the first one. This one's different, I promise. It's literally like, I don't know what
the article says. They know.
They started up with the, no, it's okay.
It's okay.
No, but really, it's okay.
I'm interested to see if that's going to be any good, who their audience is. Like, are they going for the younger crowd?
Audiences, the people that bought Mario Odyssey on Switch and are playing it all the time.
Probably.
Honestly, I don't mean that's necessarily all their audience, but I definitely feel like that's where I think the renewed interest in something like this would come from. So I don't know who that group of people is, but it's, I don't know.
I like that game. That's a mass appeal.
I love that game, but
I want a Switch just so I can play it and have a sentient hat, and what was it, Justin Robinson calls it like Mario's like heroin adventure. And his recounting when he first played it is one of the most incredible things, and I need to play it. But sentient hat, so cool.
Yeah. And then the other thing I found is it was for Jen, because I know for a long time you had your spills thing going on.
Been a little bit since we've had a spill story.
This one was the truck carrying the lottery cash for, I believe, Illinois. Let me double check that I'm making sure. Let me open
it. It is Illinois. Holy crap.
It is Illinois. The lottery truck crashed and there was cash all over the highway.
No way.
Batman plot. What?
No way. This is absolutely ABC 10 News. I wouldn't have believed it. Oh my gosh. Okay, this is insane. And by the way, for those of you that are new to Geek Grills, this is the thing I don't know how it started, but I started just with my delight for road spill stories are my favorite part of my favorite type of news story. News I don't know. Genre, they just delight me. Right? They just absolutely delight me. And so after a while, people just started sending them to me. Ember would find one like every week. Apparently there's more road spills that happen that are absolutely hilarious. This might be like one of the top ones, not for like most terrifying. I think the bees on fire was obviously the most bees terrifying of all the stories. But this is just insane to me. That's crazy. How much money is this like flying around? Like, were people out there? I would have pulled over and like grabbed myself things
being delivered in cash.
Like, I keep a net in my car just in case. That's now.
I'm keeping like a full, like a little scooper net. Or one of those,
like a pool skimmer.
Or the grabbers.
Yeah, I'm really glad you have all your kids in the minivan at that point. Just go!
Cash, like all the cash from video gambling machines involved in an accident. Oh my God. That seems like a poor plan if that's how we're setting up for an accident can take it out. Somebody lost their job. I think. Oh man. Oh, sorry for the driver. The driver was injured. Oh, that's too bad. Hopefully
definitely
he's okay.
A better story than Bitcoin. I just thought
that was the most interesting one that I saw. There was another one where I think I don't remember what state it was, but there was like a honey spill and like they're still cleaning up the honey spill or something like that, or there's still honey around.
Oh, honey! Oh no!
Oh,
yeah, the honey one got crazy though.
Find that and send it to us because I wonder if it's related. I wonder if it's the bees on fire story.
Those bees got
still
together.
Cleaning that sucker up.
We're taking it back, baby.
Oh my gosh.
So, what I brought this week, I had heard this story before. I'm sure a lot of you had. At Spotify is being sued for $1.6 billion in a copyright lawsuit by Wixen Music Publishing. They've allegedly used thousands of songs, including like Tom Petty, Neil Young, some big artists, without a license or compensation to the music publisher. You'd think we would have figured this out, right? Spotify's big. And they've been taking money from people for years for this subscription service. No, it looks like they're just Napster and faking it. I don't know. I wanted to bring it up because it came up the other night when I was playing D&D online Sunday with my international friends. My bard wanted to sing a song because there was this witch and she was singing a lonely, like someone lost at sea song. And I was like, oh, my husband wrote a song like in the 90s with Enter the Haggis called Widow's Walk. So I'm going to call up. I want to call up the song and throw it into the game because we're streaming. And do I find like a fan recording or something I forgot I posted? No. What I found is his song's available on Spotify.
Whoa.
Really?
Huh. That's crazy.
They made a deal with a UK record company of some sort that published their first album, Let the Wind Blow High, in the UK, and then just never sent them any royalties. And it was years, and the entertainment lawyer eventually just, I mean, gave up. It wasn't worth the correspondence. And then every couple of years I go look, and I find that that company has gone ahead and sold it to Celtic compilations of sorts and shit. And apparently somewhere along the line, Spotify got a hold of it and decided to just start streaming it and charging people. So if anybody out there knows a really good entertainment lawyer, I'd like to get in on this suit.
Yeah.
Wow. That's nuts.
I mean, I don't want him to get taken down, but I want him to do it right. Pay the damn artists. Pay whoever owns the copyright. Come on now.
It's important.
It really is.
Oh, boy. So with that fun piece of news, shall we head on?
Thanks for setting us up there, Linda. Or whoever it was. Thanks for setting us up the last.
Hey, you know what? We drink to that. Do it right, Spotify.
I can't.
Yeah. All right. Bitchin's my hobby. I'm good at it.
No, our discussion topic is home brewing.
Life that's full. Everyone's been good to me. So fire up that fiddle, boy, and give me one last drink. When the sun comes up, I will leave without a fight. The world is mine tonight.
All three lovely ladies that we have invited on are all homebrewers. I believe they all make very different things.
I'm sure there's some overlap for us. Like, I know, you know, Shannon and I have definitely experimented with some of the same stuff. I mean, but yeah, for the most part, I think we do kind of have different purviews.
So, okay, wait a minute. See, this is where Jen got beep, beep, beep. Jen's doesn't understand things sometimes. So I thought that you guys, there was mutual working together on the brewing. All three of you guys are.
No, we hate each other.
Like, hate each other, like each other, never communicate with one another, and definitely don't ever brew together.
I thought
I didn't realize you guys each have your own individual brewing setups, and yes?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's incredible. Yeah. Okay.
So go ahead and I guess take
today I learned.
Take turns and tell us about what you make and how you kind of got into it. Who wants to go first?
Well, Linda's looking at me, so I'll go first. So I mostly do beer. I also have for a very long time made absinthe, and will occasionally dabble in distillations like whiskeys. Now, a little quick note, I do work with a licensed distiller for that kind of thing.
I was just going to ask that question.
You can't actually just buy a still. So the wording is you can't distill for the purpose of concentrating alcohol. So for things like absinthe, where it's for purifying it, but the end result is less alcoholic than what I bought in the store, that's not even a gray area. It's fine. Just don't sell it. It's just for home use. For things where you turn, say, a failed beer, which I'll get into later, maybe into a whiskey, that is one where you have to work with a licensed with somebody who's actually got a distillery. And if we have time later on, I'm going to rant about the heartaches of starting your own distillery, because I've been trying to put one together for quite some time of my own. But I love making whiskey, and mostly though, I love making and drinking beer. I've experimented a little bit with mead, but that's definitely, Shayna's got me beat by a long shot on that one, and some other, you know, this and that. My very first brew was actually an apple cider, and I got into it. I was at a hacker convention, and they had a panel about brewing cider, and they did they had kind of like a cooking show. They had the different, it's like, okay, here's apple juice. Here's sugar. Here's yeast. Here they are all mixed together. Here they are after they've been fermenting for a while. Here's some finish for everybody to try. So my friend I was with and I went to the brew shop on the way home after that, bought some stuff to get started, made some apple cider, and then immediately switched over to making beer. And that was, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago?
That's awesome.
Absinthe actually started about 15 years ago, but that's more of an infusion kind of thing. That's then just later purified. Yeah.
All right, Shanna?
Okay. Well, like Murphy said, I tend to do more in the way of mead. Mead is basically where with wine you make it from grapes or fruit. Mead, in its pure form, is honey. Now, there are variants of meads that can have spices, that can have florals, that can even have fruits added. And those are subtypes of meads. But mead is basically, it's honey and water. Much like the Germans have German purity laws are that it's water, hops, and yeast, I think.
No, actually, for many years, it was water, hops, and malted barley. They didn't know what yeast was. And anyway, sorry.
It was just getting in there, which is when I brewed mead, I never added yeast. Well, once. I tried with the champagne yeast, but mostly I would rely on the natural. Let's hope something good gets in there.
Yeah, and there's that. You can do it without adding a yeast and hope that your environment gives you something favorable. You can use champagne yeast, which is more expensive, which will get you a sweeter, sometimes a more bubbly mead. Or to be honest, my first, five, six batches, honestly, were just bread yeast. You know, the Fleischmann stuff in the brown jar. Because that was actually how I first
started.
Those
damn packets.
And I was going on with Linda about this earlier. That is actually the same species of yeast as champagne yeast and beer yeast, Saccharomyces cerevisiae. But just they're bred for different
properties. I use packet. You know, granted, when I brewed when I was in college. I was I lived in a party house. And naturally, what do college kids do? We decide that, F it, we need to just make our own beer. which turned into a very, very involved process. And it's actually been since then, I haven't brewed since, but I have this wonderful backyard. I have a very nice flat. I have all of the area to get into it again, but I totally remember just using packet yeast for, it's been so many years now, but
so
I'm sure we
did. The whole brew shop does come in packets. You can buy it in packets.
Oh, no. Tubes. We actually specifically, I remember like straight up, because I bake a lot, that I straight up like used the yeast.
So how was your final product?
To be fair, we did a lot of different things, and I was, you know, hanging out with some crazy, it was a fun group of people.
I think college wine sounds like one step above prison toilet wine.
I mean, to be fair, we did some things. We made some stuff. No, to be fair, though, out of all the things that we brewed, the one thing I was the most happy with was we did one red ale, but I don't know what it was about the magic of that batch. It was so good. Like it was definitely the best thing that out of all the things that we had made.
Yeah, it's so hard when that happens, when something glorious occurs.
I have no idea.
Like, what? Like, what was it? Oh no.
Yeah. I did a couple of those careful records.
In fact, I recommend that for anybody who's interested in the hobby. Yeah. One of the best ways to be a good brewer is keep records of what you do, what your recipes are, if you're boiling beer, if you're making beer, how long you boil it for, all the different variables. I've never been very good at making mead. I've tried a couple of times, but one of my recipes that came out like that I consider glorious was a braggot. It's half beer, half mead, basically. It's malted barley and honey are the fermentables. And I just had some stuff and threw it in a pot, but I'm glad I took a note because it came out really well. So,
yeah.
What about you, Abby?
Oh, yeah. No, I was like, I'm with Murphy. Get precise.
I am imbibing one of Abby's brews right here, actually.
I finished mine already.
And I'm the moonshiner.
Mm-hmm.
So
delightful.
Yeah. Well, I actually married into it, which is why when Linda was talking to me about this, I said, I may be your least informative guest ever, because if I give away too much, the family will find me.
No. It's okay. Abby, I told you. I figured out your recipe. All it is orange slices, the candied kind, the candy orange slices, and you infuse it in jet fuel. That's not how I feel like I just drank that. Yeah, that
sounds it really right. Isn't.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the drink itself is known as Kittisol. This is the bottle near me because we're all having a little something tonight. But it's actually an old Norwegian recipe. The original name is Kolstad. I have no idea where in the family history it translated over, but it is about 130 proof to 140, depending on your distillation. It is enormously sweet. The way that we go ahead and make it, it is sugar. We'll talk more about like my personal love of sedimentary qualities of alcohol and orange. It is very orange.
It is very orange.
But delightful, and I use cough syrup.
That sounds like everything that I might actually like about.
Oh, it tastes like candy. It's easy to mess yourself up.
Yes, I did that last Dragon Con. If you come to Dragon Con, I will share some Kittisol with you. It is delightful.
Yeah. Sharing is the important word. With me. We can absolutely in no way make this for money.
Yeah.
No Totally not.
Sharing is caring. Sharing with your friends. Yeah, you know, I do think a disclaimer here. Definitely if you're going to engage in the production of any kind of an alcoholic beverage and really any of this process, definitely know what your legality is and your state, because it does vary state by state, which a lot of people don't actually know. And I don't want any of our listeners to find themselves in trouble for.
Fortunately, it's a very quick Google search for your state.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Easy peasy.
Just stay informed.
It's like running a drone. Just know what's up.
I mean, what is it for Georgia?
Oh, so at least for beer, it's been a long time since I looked it up, but I think it's for personal use only, obviously, 100 mm-hmm. gallons of beer a year or less for a single person. I don't remember what it was for a household. And then I don't know what the rules are for wine. That's not something I make. And then it's illegal in all 50 states to do distillation unless you have a license or work for a distillery.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually due to a
prohibition.
Well, yeah, kind of a typo.
Kind of dangerous.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
No, but I mean, if you're trying to just for I wouldn't recommend it for first timing.
No, it's true. It's especially depending on what kind of fermentables are being used. You know, different things produce more methanol, and you definitely need to know how to avoid getting much of that into your final product.
Yeah, because I've heard stories of people trying to make, you know, root beer and things exploding. So
I had some.
I was gonna say we had some chaos happen with just. I mean, we got idiot college kids like living in a house trying to be adults and then also deciding to brew their own beer. That was just an adventure. And we had a great time. Great time.
Put in the bottles too soon and keep the bottles too warm. You will definitely get exploded beer bottles. I've been there
it's
myself.
It's not directly related to brewing, but I did actually jump a keg over the fence once by mistake.
Oh, nice.
Because I had a friend of mine that worked in the science lab, and I always hated that the ice would melt and it wouldn't keep the keg cool when we had backyard parties. And my friend was like, oh, it's fine. I'll bring you some dry ice. And when he said, bring me dry ice, I didn't pay attention to exactly how much dry ice was there. So I put that in this tub, put the keg on top of it. So if you think about what happens to a can of beer, if you put it in the freezer, it did that, and then it ended up over the fence in the neighbor's backyard. That was fun. That was a fun time.
Oh my.
Meat.
Wow. Yeah.
I never had.
I was so smart with the show.
I'm impressed.
Wow.
Oh man.
But to clarify, it was a smaller keg. It wasn't the full 5 gallon. I think it was
an artillery shell.
Luckily, didn't leave like a divot in the yard. But yeah, no, it was like I think it was a 2 gallon keg. But yeah, bad. Oh, anyway, so yeah, so what? How did you? Okay, so you married into it. You decided you saw a thing in an event. Shanna, what was it that got you into? Like, how did you end up into this hobby, or adventure?
I ended up in it because I had a friend who was kind of doing it, sort of at the time, but I wasn't really paying attention. Oddly enough, I got interested in it because I found a recipe in a Celtic cookbook. Yes, I am not joking. I have the cookbook in my kitchen. I can prove this. It was basically doing the old style one with the balloon as an air trap. And I went, hey, this sounds
interesting. Yeah, we did that my first one.
Yeah, and I was going to mention that as a easy starter for later if we get the chance. But it was that with the honey and I think it was elderflowers or something like that. I'd have to actually go dig the cookbook out. And I said, okay, sure, I'll try this. Did that first batch. It was okay. But I said, I think I can do better with this because I tend to cook and tinker. And, well, let's see. I guess I do okay considering it's probably, 15 years. Close to, and I have people go, so when's your next batch? I don't know. We'll figure out a swap when I have one.
I had a friend of mine who
that is
like
illegal,
that.
But we have on a chance exchange bottles.
I had a friend of mine whose parents owned a large number of apple trees, and so he started brewing hard cider, and that's exactly it. It was like, hey, so it's that time of year. If you just happen to exchange, we can find some kind of an equal exchange. But yeah, his stuff was great. I tried a hard cider once. It did not come out as well as his did. But it actually came out pretty well. That was probably one of my more favorite things that we made. Other than the red ale, but like as far as like adventuring into other things, the cider was fun.
So, let's see. So on our little notes here, we've got fermenting versus distilling versus infusion. Do each of you do one of those, or do you all three? What's
Educate
kind
me.
Of the difference?
What does it mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I know I did stuff, but I don't know the word.
Okay, so that's
fermentation
three questions,
is the production
three guests,
of alcohol
each
with
of
yeast.
You pick one.
So that's baseline. That's beer, liquor, anything starts with that. Distillation is concentrating alcohol from what you have fermented using a still, a distillation apparatus, or still, as the
kids
say.
So that's what you mean when you say you had like a failed beer that you then distilled into something else?
Exactly.
Is that what
Yep, That's because cool. A whiskey is basically a beer without any hops. It's been distilled. They're both malted barley, but they're both fermented from malted barley, typically. American whiskey is half corn. and then usually half barley. Or,
like everything in America, it's
corn
is what makes it even bourbon,
yes, corn, American and Canadian whiskeys. So, you know, bourbon and Canadian whiskeys are some going to have some percentage of corn in them. If you see something that says single malt, that's what they mean, is it is a single kind of malt and no other of malted barley, and then no other fermentable. Fermentable being the thing the yeast eat to make alcohol. So corn sugar, the sugar in grapes, the sugar in malted barley. So sugar and honey, that's the fermentables. And then infusion is when you have a liquor and you want to give it flavor. So you add herbs or, you know, flowers or plants or whatever it is you want to soak into it. And then you purify it afterwards, either by straining or distilling. So that's, yeah. And some examples of that would be something like even commercial absinthe is made that way. So it's already, so there's a first run of fermenting a very clean fermenting a very clean sugar wash, so you get just mostly alcohol and water, distilling that, so you get a very clean liquor, and then infusing the flavors into it, and then just infusing the huge number of herbs into it, and then distilling it again.
Yeah, I had a friend.
Not all infusions are distilled again.
I had a friend
Interesting
make.
Interesting little fact is, actually, most extracts are done through this infusion process. Mm-hmm. For example, was doing a homemade marshmallow recipe, different thing, but I couldn't find a lavender extract, but I had food grade lavender and a pure vodka, so I did an infusion and got my extract that way.
I've done this too, actually. I didn't even think about that till just now, but I guess that is pretty adjacent to this. I've done baking, it was like one of my hobbies for a long time, but I did some extraction like that. I'm trying to remember what the one most recently was, but that through that exact process. It's so interesting.
Did you ever thought about that? Ember, did you have a question?
I was just saying, I have a friend years ago who made a go at absinthe with, you know, a purified alcohol and wormwood. And wormwood is so vile, I think.
If you don't distill it, it will make you very sick after you do the infusion. Right?
Well, I mean, it didn't make me sick.
Maybe that's good.
Made me friendly. Yeah.
It's disgusting. I'll get the powder in my tongue sometimes when I'm making it.
Because like, your body doesn't dried herbs. Want it. Yeah.
It's gross.
Basically, you know, thanks, Murphy. That is the most solid of information. In our department, it ends up being a little of all three, because of course in the end you've got to get the really strong orange in so that there's a infusion afterward. And I was about to say, while I'm positive the recipe itself came originally from more of a potato crop, so I'm betting originally the distillations came out a lot like vodka. When they moved to America, they moved to Iowa. So at this point, it became a grain alcohol.
There's no corn in Iowa, by the way. It's a corn-free state.
Most vodka is actually made with grain, as is, in fact, most commercial liquors. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. I'm talking the old stuff.
Yeah, the old school. Old school.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, potatoes are terrible fermentable. That's what they had.
They really are.
So if you are... Now, I'm curious about, like, the part that interested me and that I had a lot of fun with when we did have this brewing project is I rented I don't even know what it's called, but the thing that you weld with and, like, the mask, and we rented it, and I literally put together, like, an outdoor stove where I had burners, and I put them in, and I literally just made, like, it looked all like a shoe rack, but made out of metal. But anyway, I literally made my own stoves, so that we could actually functionally brew essentially in the backyard to actually boil such a large amount of liquid. So I'm
so
curious.
So you actually made a 5-gallon batch with a real big pot, mm-hmm. with like a 7-gallon pot?
Yep. Used a keg shell originally. The first time I used a keg shell as my pot. But what interested me is that, like, what kind of space, how are you set up? How much of your space does this take over? Like,
I can actually do mine and do most of mine out of my kitchen. So,
I mean,
yeah.
as long as it's not a time period of like really high temperature fluctuations, yeah. Like this would be yeah. awful right now, but around summer and I get closer to convention season, then that is where our big brews happen. And, you know, I'm blessed with a nice basement that we can keep things out of the way.
Yeah. Cause for me, like Shannon was saying, I do everything out of my kitchen for beer, and yeah, some of the equipment takes up some space for storage, but it's really just storing the bottles while they're actually fermenting, or while they're like storing the alcohol while it's fermenting, and then storing the beers while they're aging. That's the biggest issue. Other than that, I just do it on my stovetop.
So how do you tell when it's like the proof that you, like, how do you tell alcohol proof? Do you just kind of guess?
Oh, there's a really cool little device.
A hygrometer.
Yes.
There is a device that you can actually get in homebrew stores. It looks like a little glass dowel, but there's a weight in it, and there is a measurement on it. You basically drop it into the middle of your batch once you're done cooking it, if you cook it. Mm-hmm. And you drop it in there, you get a reading, you process, then you put it in there again, and then you do some math. And that's how you find out what your alcohol proof or percentage is.
That's those true for non-distilled things. For distilled liquors, they use a different, it's the same kind of device. It's called a proof and trail hydrometer. But it works the same way, but you don't have to do the before and after, because it's just measuring water it's measuring the density of the liquid. So you're basically comparing the density of before the yeast get to work and the density after they get to work. And then there's a lot of, I use a table or a online calculator. I don't know all the math for that, but,
I don't need to reinvent the wheel. Somebody else figured out a tool that works, I will use that tool.
Yeah, so no, that's been in.
I don't need to prove anything to anybody.
Yeah, that's been in use since the 1800s and does a fabulous job.
Yeah, you can buy.
That's interesting.
Yep, you could buy ones that use light diffraction, but I don't know why you would. I guess if you just don't want to have to measure on the fly, or if you want to be able to measure it on the fly and not have to be very careful when you take the beer out of the fermenter and measure it, because you have to be very sanitary with beer, and probably also with mead, and I'm sure you with sunshine.
Oh yeah, every instrument is washed with distilled water.
Yeah,
well, and everything, anything that can get in there, I mean, it's going to be in there. I mean, that's why it's like, if you think about it, I mean, the thing that always comes to my mind is the fact that, like, when wine is fermenting for a very, very long time by comparison. But it's still interesting to me that, like, there's that wine from Spain. It tastes like garbage to me, but other people really love it. But it gets this, like, certain flavor because of the type of barrels that they put it in is different and has this, like, crust of whatever inside of it. And makes it taste like shit dirt. But
that's how I feel about barrel-aged beers. I like whiskey, but barrel-aged beers taste like shit dirt. I'm going to start using that.
Critical part for doing the homebrew process, and it's something that I can conceivably do in a weekend, but to be honest, most of the time is taken up for me personally is with making sure everything's clean, the pot that I'm doing my prep in, the food grade, and this is very important if you're doing it in a jug or in a barrel or something like that, it has to be food grade safe. Don't use the barrel that you pick up from the grocery.
She's right. The yeast will eat whatever. Yeah, if it is something that yeast can eat, they will eat it. So if you use just a plastic jug, you will end up with yeast plastic poop in your alcohol in your finished product. And
gross.
yes, it's gross, and it's potentially very bad for you. So that's a good point, Shanna.
But everything has to be clean. I even go to the point of before I bottle stuff, I run my bottles through my dishwasher because it has a sanitation or a hot cycle.
I boiled mine.
I wash them through on one cycle, and then I go through and basically sanitize them on a second cycle before anything I actually put into the finished product goes in those.
Yep.
Yeah. No, the bottles in particular on my end have to be as clean as possible, because as much as I love the sedimentary elements I'm working with, any additional objects would really throw that side.
Is that a cigarette butt in my kennel? Come on now.
you know what? The rock candy. If the rock candy grows, like if it has extra elements, that it'll start forming and growing very, very strangely.
That's one of the best things about Ivy's Kittisol is that once it's been sitting for a while, it starts to form its own rock candy at the bottom of the glass.
This is a collection from about a 3-year-old bottle that was finished off recently. It's what I consider the difference between a green batch, which is freshly bottled. This one actually came through about maybe August of last year, and it's got a nice layer that's building. But what happens is that as the sugar is removed into a candy form, the alcohol gets stronger.
Yeah, so the longer you keep it, the more it's going to punch you in the face.
Yeah.
And that's one of the few distilled beverages that's true of, because distillation kills yeast, so there's not anything producing more alcohol. And in this case, it's things that are not alcohol are getting removed.
Exactly. It's not about the actual, you know, yeast-sugar relationship any longer at that point. It's just coming out of saturation.
Yep.
The entire alcohol is fully saturated to syrup level.
I love that it's science. This is why I like baking over cooking. I hate cooking, but I love baking because baking is science.
I love the science aspect of brewing too.
Love it.
It's a lot of fun. But yeah, it's also one of the ways my kitchen gets the cleanest. It's like, oh, one person beer day before, scrub everything down.
That is true. Same for me.
So what is kind of your favorite? I mean, you said science is kind of your favorite thing.
Well, getting drunk is my favorite thing.
The favorite thing.
Oh, amen.
That's an episode title right there.
Drinking it.
So what about you guys, Abby and Shanna? What's your favorite parts about brewing, being home brewers?
Oh, God.
I'd let Abby answer first.
Well, I mean, I think it's almost ceremony. That's the fun part is that, you know, it used to be that I could brew once and it would last like 2 years. Like the batch would last. Now, of course, you know, I love my friends. I have a lot more fun. Dragon Con makes me super happy. and so at this point, I think what previously was a 2-year brew is down to one, maybe less. So, but it always feels like a thing of ceremony. Like this is the time, this is the way, this is what we do.
It's both celebration and ritual.
Yes. And then there is a thing. There is like bottle after bottle filling my kitchen and it's wonderful. And then I realized my house is right now.
He's got some family recipe, and well, I don't know family recipe or if it's like cousin or whatever. Somebody discovered it, but it's called apple pie, and I don't exactly know what it is, but it's apple pie as hell, and it's so good. And he always brings some to share, and like that's one of my favorite things about my friends that you know brew or whatever is the sharing element of it.
It's
anything. Like I love that. Like when I've gone on like camping trips or there's a LARP event that happened that I used to go to, where all the other vampire LARPs are like pretty LARPs where we're all like, oh, it's gamer prom. That one happens at a campsite or campgrounds, which is kind of weird for those of us playing Prissy Vampires. But that was one of the fun things. It's like, you know, kind of that kind of a vibe where you're hanging out with your gamer friends and going camping and somebody brings along something that they made. And it's just, that's awesome.
It's
like the community side of it.
And it's like, that is something that crosses subcultures a lot. Like hanging out at home brew shops, people will bring in stuff to sample and try. So you might get, so I've shared things with like the owner of one of the brew shops in Atlanta. There's a music store I used to hang out around, and the owners of it made a point of knowing who around was distillers, so they'd always have moonshine, and we'd always do this cloak and dagger thing where we'd share our moonshines and stuff that people had, and it was always a lot of fun. So you're right about that. The ceremony and the sharing is great.
A lot of it for me, I have to agree, it is the hey, I made this, and then people go, do you have more?
That's always nice.
Abby, Linda, you, and Murphy too. I mean, everyone in the crowd as such has basically come to know me for having mead as such.
You make the best mead I've ever had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very good.
Well, thank you. this one is a Yule one, a spice mead with spices. I call it Yule because it's got the mulling spices.
We'll have to talk about that. My boyfriend would love it.
Cinnamon. That is one, basically, that was actually one of my first blends that I came up with, and I was very proud of it, and a lot of people have really loved it and enjoyed it. My other one that I tend to do fairly often now is my orange mead, which I have had people threaten to accost me for, which is involved, you know, whole oranges as such. it's very much the pride of I made this thing and people want it. That's awesome.
Elizabeth, give me another one of those offers.
it's that pride of I made this and I made something that's good enough that people actually want it and ask for it by name specifically.
So I will say, when I have a beer that doesn't come out well, or anything that doesn't come out well, it goes to waste because I will not share it with my friends because it's like, no, this isn't good enough and I don't want to drink it. It gets turned into whiskey, but I don't know if it, not that I want to say you've ever had a bad batch, but I think everybody's who brews has probably had a batch that didn't come out exactly to their liking, especially if you're experimenting.
No matter what you've done, you've gone through something. I'm sure Ember is a fabulous cook, among other things, but I'm sure that she's been had a few kerfuffles every now and then.
When I used to brew mead, I did it, I mean, you spoke about ceremony, I used to do it, four times a year, and then kind of it would rotate. The following year we would be drinking the previous years, and the first time I tried adding ginger,
that's the kind I've made that, before,
it created a problem. It did something with the fermentation that threw it, right? Because I mean, think about it, ginger is like chemically,
you don't want to have yeast eating much ginger because it's super, it has a lot of cellulose, so I imagine it probably gave probably made you have headaches.
Well, no, the taste was just bad.
Gotcha.
It just didn't work. It tried
tasted
to do
like ginger?
Something. it tasted like
not for everyone, I guess.
Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted it. It was although it got some fizz to it, which most of from the recipe I used, most didn't get a fizz on their own, and that one got a fizz. But it was, you know, zombie fizz, so that was bad. So I was really scared of using ginger again after that because of the interaction that happened. But then again, like I mentioned before, I was relying on atmospheric yeast, so it could have also...
Oh, yeah, that's always a danger. If you didn't boil the ginger first, it could certainly have had some, you know, lactobacillus, some sour bacteria or something on it. So speaking of atmospheric yeast...
It could have also been a really woody one.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody else has ever tried it, but I know some home brewers love, and I've cultivated some of my own yeast before, usually based on like a previous beer's yeast. So I know some people actually cultivate yeast from flowers or from honey. So they'll either water down honey or they'll get actual, you know, flowers from their garden and put them on a substrate that yeast like agar-agar and actually grow their own strains of yeast from that. So, which is kind of neat.
Hardcore.
It is very hardcore. It's fun.
Yeah. I feel like I have a friend that like is a kind of a psycho when it comes to making her own bread and stuff or bread goods. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's how she started it. Like that recently, like that's been a thing that she did. She's like, oh, and I made it from my garden. And I'm like, what? How did that? Must be what she was talking about. Because I was basically, like, what are you talking about?
It's basically mycology at that point. So it's kind of. Well, make sure you get exactly what you want growing and verify.
Yeah, that sounds terrifying to me. That sounds like that lady that, like, there was, like, an article. This was, like, years ago, but there was, like, an article about the lady who, like, grew mushrooms in her yard and then, like, put them in, like, a spaghetti sauce and got her whole family sick.
Good gosh. Yeah.
Growing mushrooms is not
easy. They're red. They match. God, let's eat them.
That sounds interesting. It sounds like making your own kombucha or doing, like, a San Francisco-type sour bread, but at the same time... To be honest, unless you have a really careful environment, it's hard to do that because, let's be honest, most of us don't have white rooms. It's just
Tupperware and a fan.
True, but that's still small scale, and for the average person, that's going to be kind of difficult.
Yeah, so for culturing up yeast, you actually do it in a petri dish so to start the culture, and then you actually just brew very small batches of beer with no hops. So just like the plainest beer you can imagine with your tiny bits of culture. And then that's how you make a starter. That's how you make, it's the same way you make a starter for bread too.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's from a tiny culture. But, you know,
so
again.
You make sure it's working first. Yeah.
Yeah, depends on what grows in your petri dish.
Now, coming back to a bit of chemistry here, Shanda, you said something that caught my attention. You use whole orange?
For the orange mead, I tend to use the entire orange. Part of the thing is I basically take an entire orange, If I can, I do organic ones. If not, I'll buy the regular oranges, and I scrub the living heck out of them because I try to get all food wax off, all the chemicals off, and then I just basically take the entire orange, skin, seeds, all of it. I just basically cut it into eight, drop it in as part of the process.
There's you do that you don't during the boil or after you're done or after it's finished fermenting?
I actually do that. For that particular one, I do it after the boil because I want to get as much of the orange essence, right. Which is, you know, which
but do you do it when it's still hot? I'm just kind of curious if you do it,
yeah,
you
I was
do it when it's still
I was wondering if it had any, if the acid had any effect.
Actually, because the honey has a strong amount of the sweetness to it, it doesn't. I usually wait till it's at least cooled, simply because it's easier to do things, because the oranges, after they've been scrubbed and sectioned, I drop them in the carboy. Well, I used to do them in the carboy. I don't do that anymore because my husband
told me,
cleaning oranges that have disintegrated down to pulp out of a carboy is a pain in the you-know-what.
Beer in a carboy. It looks great while it's fermenting, but then you're just in there with a giant pipe cleaner. They make this thing specifically for cleaning carboys, and it looks like
exactly.
It's a huge pipe cleaner.
Yeah. I had to buy one of those for that first carboy because those carboys, while not expensive, they're expensive enough. I'm like, no, I'm not getting rid of this.
Yeah.
Now I use a food grade bucket. But yes, the oranges I drop in, and then the honey mixture, once it's cooled, at least at a point where I'm not going to burn myself with moving the pot, gets poured in. So it's kind of body temperature is not necessarily full cool.
Yeah, I was just curious because I know I've made, blueberry beers and stuff before, and the blueberries introduced a different blueberry yeast to the beer.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that. That's one of the things that we tried that was stupid. Dumb college kids should never try things like that. No, I'm just kidding. We were a very, very troublesome group of people trying to do stuff. I went to UC Santa Cruz. I went to a pothead hippie school, so that's just if I can give an idea of the group of people that I may have been living with and the attempts to do things. But yeah, somebody tried that, and that did not. That was, when you're adding, because that's the thing, is if you're adding something else, it's science, and if you're adding something else to it, it does stuff.
Well, yeah, you know, before the oranges get to your house, even when they're organic, they've been in a store, they've been in a truck, they're going to have, and they've been in a tree. They're going to have yeast. They naturally have yeast occurring on them. They'll have, you know, other bacteria growing on them, and depending on they'll have bacteria growing on them, and whether you're lucky or not, and I don't know much about oranges. I don't know if they're specific, if they're more conducive to yeast or not. That's just why I was curious.
Yeah, it's like fun fact: yeast is a bacteria.
Nope.
No, it's not.
No. It's funny. A lot of beers are made with yeast as well as bacteria, but yeah, just my experience with adding fruit to things when it wasn't at sanitation temperature, so you know, after it was boiled but before the alcohol was created, was or adding fruit to things, I'd end up with a weird yeast combination sometimes. I never had anything go sour or anything like that, just flavors I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
I think it's an accessible
items involving fruits, you kind of have to handle that differently. Mm. If you're doing a show mead, which is just honey and water, nothing else added, that you have a lot of control over. So you can do more with it in so far as during the process.
Right, you can control the yeast, and yeah.
Exactly. If you're doing a melomel, which is a mead with a fruit added, and this could be any type of fruit under the sun, is a melomel, or you could do... Then there are even types of melomels that have specific names for the fruits. A sizer is a melomel which has had apples added. A piment is grapes or grape wine. I used to have, and forgive me, Linda, I'm going to mention you only because you're in the podcast, but I've had folks say, like Linda said, I love your mead. It's so much better in Chaucer's, and I cringe because Chaucer's is not mead. It is a piment. At best, because it is grape juice with a little bit of honey added. So my snobbery came out there. I apologize.
That happens to me all the time, Jen. That happens to me all the time if people talk about beer.
Okay, but yeah, that Chaucer's is not real mead. It isn't. It's white wine that they have added honey flavoring to.
I know that now. You told me that.
See, now you're educated.
Now I'm educated.
Yes, you are. You have been educated, so it's fine.
You definitely learn a lot of making stuff.
Yeah. There's methaglins, I think I'm saying that right, which is the spice ones. My Yule Mead is a Metheglin because it basically has spices.
Metheglin.
Yeah, thank you.
That's the one I'd heard as.
I always wondered how to pronounce that word.
Yes, that one trips me. Rudamel,
I have a Scottish friend. That's the only reason I know.
Okay, fair. Rudamels are ones that have flowers, usually roses, added. Short meads, they're also called quick meads. Those are the ones that have a very short, they're meant to age quickly, sometimes days versus weeks.
Wow.
Those are ones that are basically meant to be, you know, you drink it, you make it on Monday, you plan to drink it by Friday or Saturday. Then there's the great meads, which are slow ages. These ones are years versus months. I tend to not do those, not that I haven't had the interest in it, simply because I am worried that I'm going to lose track of my notes between.
I write on my bottles the date. Mm-hmm.
I have started doing that with some of them, but since I also do fewer batches now, I used to do maybe 4 or 5 batches a year. I kind of slowed down some now, mostly because real life tends to kick my butt because
I know, right?
Doing a mead batch kit because of all the cleaning, because I'm super, super conscientious about it. All the cleaning and then the process and then the cleanup after the process.
That's the part I don't like. I like the cleaning beforehand. I find it kind of therapeutic because everything looks so nice before you get started.
So, by the way, if you ever do homebrew, don't ever, ever, ever let your honey boil over because that will be a sticky mess.
Yeah, I made a mistake with beer, never with honey. I can imagine.
Yes. I was scrubbing honey foam off of things for weeks.
Oh,
that
no.
batch, I learned. So there are lots of types of meads that can give you results.
Are any of you willing to share any recipes?
I couldn't give you one right now off the cuff, but yes, we could share some with the show if you want. If you want for notes,
yeah, we could probably like add something on the notes if there's anything, or maybe even any recommended resources or links that you think would be valuable to our listeners. That would be
joy
awesome.
Brewing.
And Abby's not allowed because she married into it, and the family will murder her if she.
They love me too much to murder me, but. I won't be welcome at holidays.
That would be unfortunate. Revolution will be had somehow.
There is a recipe. You can actually find a lot of recipes online now. My orange recipe, mead recipe, is based off one called Ancient Orange. That's one you can actually Google fairly easily. There's a number of online sources. Some of them are like generic homebrewing, homebrewtalk.com.
Oh, I love that site.
That one's a pretty good one, and it's that one has it kind of some of the forums separated out by the types of brewing. Then there's meadmakers.org, and that's mead-makers.org, which you can actually, it's a pseudo-association. You can get information on it. You can actually sign up and become a member based off certain criteria and levels. You can be a home brewer low level, or you can be a commercial organization even for those. There's also stormthecastle.com/mead. I did put these in the show notes if you want to add these in for things, Ember. And I can even go, if you want, I can check and see if I can find that cookbook for the original recipe that everything started with for me.
That would be, I really love the links. We'll definitely make sure we have links in the show notes for everybody. This has been awesome. I'm like a little bit of a beer snob. Like, most people like the lowest, I don't know, I'm so picky about it. And I would love to dive in. It's just interesting.
And you've definitely already got some experience, so there is that.
Yeah, it's many years ago.
It's not a cheap hobby. It's not a cheap hobby.
So before we have to kind of wrap up our discussion, unfortunately, but
with this many guests, this is to be expected.
Yeah, but so are you guys working on anything in particular right now?
I actually don't have much in the pipeline right now. I've got a whiskey that's aging that I'll be bottling next month. It's a 5-year whiskey. And so we'll see how that comes out. Other than that, I don't really have anything planned at the moment. I'm probably going to do another black IPA next. It's kind of my go-to style.
Mm-hmm. No, it'll be summer before we brew again.
Yeah, you need your right heat.
It's right now, the way that it's blasting from freezing to 60s, I can't even dream of trying anything.
When something's fermenting, you need it to keep a pretty regular temperature, or you'll get weird flavors.
It needs to be reasonably consistent before you can have anything really managed. I mean, air traps and all are great and all, but when the liquid can't figure out if it's freezing or fizzing, it's a bad thing.
And also, yeast actually produce different Easters, different flavors at different temperatures. That's why, you know, Anchor Steam tastes so much different than Newcastle. They're very similar recipes, but they're the same kind of yeast. They're fermented at different temperatures, or the same species of yeast.
Right, because one of them, it's funny, well, cool. Yeah, I was going to make a comment about the gray raininess of San Francisco compared to, like, was it UK? I don't know. Was that the other one you said? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. I was really just choosing two of the brown ales.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Anchor Steam is technically an ale.
It's funny because I like both of those, you think that they would be the same because they are really, like, made out of the same stuff, but it's just, it's different environments.
Different environments, different temperatures. One of them's fermented much colder. So.
And do you have any mead brewing right now, Shanna?
Not at the moment. I think I've actually gone through the last of my current batches, so I will probably be starting up maybe a small batch of the Yule sometime in the next few weeks. The problem is that I have to figure out scheduling because I have a split work schedule, which is to say I have one day off a week on, like today, Tuesday, is my day off, and then I get another day off on Saturday. So that tends to make it a little complicated for me because of the process.
How precise do you have to be? Because I know with beer, you have like a day or two of variance between, you know, when you start it fermenting and then when you bottle it. There's, you know, 2 weeks is great for most beers, but you can push it a little or even bring it in a little. Is mead a more precise?
That one, it tends to be different on, honestly, based off what the mead is. My Yule mead, I have a little more leeway because of the spices.
Gotcha.
The orange one, I have to be a lot more precise with simply because the additional sugars for the oranges.
Right.
Admittedly, I can usually tear, I've been doing this long enough, I can tell with the air trap, which hopefully.
Yeah, when it stops bubbling, there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When the bubbling goes beyond a certain point, I'm going, okay, I need to start cleaning the bottles in the next, you know, week or so and bottle it. It can be anywhere from 6 weeks to, I think I've gone a stretch as long as 8 weeks before I have to bottle something. So it can vary.
Oh, wow. So
and like you said, the temperature makes a huge difference on that.
Yep.
Well,
awesome.
If there are a million other questions
I could ask, we could totally do this again.
Yeah.
Yes.
Please, listeners, if you would like them to come back on and talk some more about brewing, you can chime in.
We could do a demonstration.
Or do a demonstration or something. You know, let us know.
I did that work once. It was fun.
You can chime in by emailing us at geekgrills@gmail.com. Is the phone number still a thing?
Yep.
Yeah. You can ring us at 508-474-5577.
You can
Leave us a message. Someone will...
I might
listen
even answer.
Someone will listen to it.
Yeah.
If it accidentally like links in him, Amber's gonna be like, hello.
It's a Google Voice number.
It's just the Monsanto Corporation's number. It's
when it rings that landline that only gets telemarketers but says your name because it's a Google number, I know it's for Geek Grills.
Yay! So, everybody, we're going to do what are you most anticipating? Jen, you're up first.
So, Black Panther is now very, very soon. Very, very soon. By the way, I'm still going through my my plan, my roadmap. So, we all know that my two favorite things in the world are Blizzard and Marvel. So, in preparing for Infinity War, this has been, let's see, where am I at now? I just finished Thor 2. So I have my big long list of all the shit that I have to watch before Infinity War. So I think this week is going to be, no, I think I'm finishing off Phase 2. So I'm rewatching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now.
Ooh,
kind of
okay.
Which has been weird going through the rewatch.
That's quite hard.
And I have a schedule and a plan so I can make sure that I do all my rewatches in time. So that's where we're at right now.
I'm so glad that's on your list.
Yeah, well, it has to be. You have to have all the things. Next issue of Rogue and Gambit comes out tomorrow. Can't wait. That's going to be issue number 2. And I think there's only going to be 5 issues, which is like, that seems wrong. I need like 105 issues of Rogue and Gambit, but I live, I guess, maybe. So the Walking Dead teaser came out. I'm refusing to watch it because I'm angry right now about stuff and things. If you watch The Walking Dead, you know why. But February 25th, that's coming up very, very soon. I, for some reason, thought I had like months, and I'm like, oh no. Oh shit! That is soon. So, preparing mentally for Walking Dead.
Okay. Blah. Sorry, my voice got caught in my throat. Cool.
Never.
Amber, what are you doing? Are you
looking forward to my husband's gig on Friday here at the local place, Broad Street Burger, that has like. Many, many brews on tap, which makes me happy.
Fun.
And, excuse me, small town Comic-Con is this weekend, so I am excited about that.
Cool.
Nice.
We had a little one startup, at my college. It's grown really big now, but, I was there during the first years, and it was really cool when it was tiny and in actually on campus. Abby. What are you looking forward to?
Ooh, well, I'm a massive fan of Ready Player One, so the fact that movie is incoming
makes
me so excited.
Yes.
So excited. This is going to be another excellent nerd year for everybody. I mean,
oh, God,
last
yeah.
year
no,
was
no,
insane.
No,
this
kidding.
Year is going to be insane. It's
I mean,
nuts.
Spring alone, Wrinkling
like the
Time.
Quickly, damn Ready it.
And about May, nearly a year ago, we had the Sentinels of the Multiverse. They've been running... you know, their segments, well, at this point, they've reached Oblivion. And Oblivion is the finale. The big bad, the Galactus, the world, the universe destroyer. And so that is finally going to drop as of February 23rd. So that's right on top of us. And that's going to be the card battle system for that release. And after that, I mean, in the lore of the games, that's going to be the end of that universe, and it's just going to split off into the Sentinels RPG and Sentinels Tactics board games. And as we can tell, I'm super into the lore behind all of these characters in the card games and the RPG. So it's pretty cool to me to watch, you know, they've decided not just to stop making the card game, but to tell a story doing it. So I'm really excited by that. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. What about you, Murphy?
I am looking forward to Abby and Shanna's next batches of of Kennesaw and Mead, respectively. So get on it, you two, now. I mean, I am.
Try your absinthe.
I still need to try your absinthe.
Let's have a party.
Woo,
I've got
party!
Something should be about right as far as aging goes. Right now, it takes a long time. About a year is perfect, but a month to a year of aging. I mean, I think we're all looking forward to the Black Panther. I didn't put it on my list of things, but I am very excited about that. Mostly what I look forward to is upcoming LARP events. We have a great LARP scene here in our area, and there's a lot to look forward to
I'm
there.
I'm so jealous. As someone who has participated in One World by Night for so long in the West Coast, in the Midwest, and then also in the Mid-Atlantic, and then now being where, LARPs don't exist, apparently.
Sounds like it's time for someone to step up and make one.
I tried. I legitimately tried. But it's funny because even when I was in Obi-Wan, it was like, I don't know what they're doing down there in Atlanta or in Georgia or northern Florida. But it's like, Jesus, everybody down there LARPs. And there's just the biggest populations of any games. And I was a coordinator. I'm like, how are there this many players that I have to care about in this one game? And it's insane to me how much LARP you guys have down there.
Well, yeah, and we love our LARP staff people, all the work that goes into it is...
Somebody, I forget who it was, but somebody has actually made a giant calendar with all of the LARPs that are in it. It's like...
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's got, I think it's got everything.
It's just Greater Atlanta.
But there's 20 of them on the
calendar.
Yeah,
that's the
same. Well, especially Big House Salon as well. Yeah. It's a huge
And the sad thing is, I'm sure they still don't have all of them because there's a lot of the LARPs that kind of are trying to start up towards Chattanooga that are coming, kind of creeping down this way too, that are, I'm sure they don't have on there.
That's awesome. I miss LARP.
North Carolina is a LARP desert. I've searched.
Aww.
I'm literally living in a desert that is LARP desert.
What about you, Shanna?
Yes, I am on the Marvel bandwagon to support Black Panther. I know there's a lot of my friends of color, or however you want to friend speak it, but it's the fact that it is a awesome setting. They look like they've done Black Panther properly, and I'm so fucking for it. It's not even funny. Pardon my French.
No pardon necessary.
I think we're all happy about seeing proper representation. It's 2018.
And yeah, I have to admit I'm with Murphy on this also. I'm looking very much so forward to the LARP season, because there's some things that are winding down for me, kind of, and then other ones I'm kind of assisting with other things and such. So there's a lot of that to look forward to. It's always fun times.
Yeah. Plus, it's you know, the Dora Milaje. We need to see the Dora Milaje.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, you gamer. Yes. Nerds. I mean, what?
Nerd. Well, what about you, Linda?
Black Panther, of course. I'm super looking forward to seeing all the lore with it. Looks the costumes look amazing, and just it all looks gorgeous.
I'm awesome. Excited about the visuals too. I agree.
But actually, there's a movie coming out the same day, which I'm probably not going to get to see the same day. It's called Early Man. It's by the same people that made Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run. It's Aardman Studios, and so the British actors ask them if they can be in their movies, like to voice act. They've got Eddie Raymond, I think I might be pronouncing that wrong. He was in Fantastic Beasts. They have Tom Hiddleston. They have Maisie Williams, Timothy Spall.
Richard Ayoade.
Yeah, they've got just all these really big name actors that they have for their voice acting, and they always make really, really just quality movies. And it's all stop motion. It's all stop motion.
Cat!
Sorry, my cat is trying to get into my room.
I had to feed my cat because otherwise I would have
had to. Mom!
Yeah, I'm like a poltergeist or something in here. There's this weird clocking
like,
behind
this
us.
What's happening?
There it goes.
Yeah, sorry, he just completely wants to locked down.
It's been a lot of fun being on the show. He just wants to be part of it.
So I'm really looking forward to Early Man as well as Black Panther. They both look amazing for different reasons.
I'm in. That's awesome. Oh, yeah. I'm going to let Ember give the thanks, but just remember we are 100% solely supported by our patrons. We love all of you. You guys are all the best, the very best. Apparently I'm going to sing a Pokemon song. I don't know what's happening. All right.
Again?
Number two, if you would like to become a patron, you can do so at www.patreon.com/grills. That's GRILLS. And Ember, would you like to give a shout out to our most excited? I'm so excited because he's awesome. Go ahead.
He is awesome. Thank you very much, Vinod Thomas. You're a fantastic friend and now a patron of the Geek Grills podcast.
Yay!
I can also update our page today. We do have supporter levels that include a title, Lord, Lady, Sir, Dom, King, depending, you know, on your level. But anything... there's a discrepancy there. I'll figure out later. We originally had listed that as $3 and up, but on the site it says $5 and up.
No, so it's not. Anybody... It's gone now. That's an old tier.
Yeah, but it's still in the background.
It's in the background because there are some supporters there. So we'll dig into it.
So correct me in the stream, but I'm going to say that I'm going to go ahead for now and put everyone $3 and up in, and we'll discuss later because we have patrons that have left us. We have patrons that have upped their levels, that have down their levels. So we're going to figure out what exactly we're going to do about this bestowing.
Yeah,
titles
if you were a $3
patron,
you should be included in the $5 patron line at the same rank. I understand what you're saying, Amber.
Right,
totally.
Yeah, because it keeps, I mean, and we're getting people, because you can pledge at any level you want. It doesn't matter. You can go in there and throw 50 cents or whatever. You can customize that yourself. But we have thanked people, and I have finally updated our website to reflect our gratitude and titles bestowed upon new patrons and patrons who have upped their levels recently.
As a side note, well, Ember reminded me about the updates. I kept meaning to say this. I did update, since we are already recording live, I did update our goal. If we get to $100 per month, The grills will do, if you like grills, you want more grills, we'll do a monthly game night and get together. And I don't know, that could be all kinds of things. It could be video games. It could be RPG. I don't know. We could talk about it, but help us get there. And I've updated that. And yeah, so help us get there so we can have more grills.
If we do video games, we should, you know, co-op Human Fall Flat because it's hilarious.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, I wanted to say one thing about Vinod, too. Not only has he been a longtime supporter, I never put it in the notes, but I was thinking it as soon as I added him to our list as a new patron. He has always, every single week, with a, like just absolutely specifically yes. before I even get a chance to, reshares our episode links every single week. And I think that if you can't support us financially, I get it. Even just going to our Facebook page and sharing it is awesome, and that helps us. And I think it's really cool, and I want to thank him for that, too.
Yeah, yes. Thank you.
Yay. On that note, yeah, along with our Twitter, which is where he religiously shares that, I thank him very, very much. We love iTunes reviews, Stitch reviews, wherever you listen to us, let us know. Email us, let them know what podcatcher you use, but leave a review. It really helps other people find us. It helps our rankings. We get enough at a time. We might be on their front page, and our worlds will change, all thanks to you. We have gotten more stars thrown at us recently, anonymously. No new reviews, but thank you, thank you, thank you, all of you who have taken the effort to go that far.
Alrighty. So, Well, first of all, for our guests, is there any place particular, like, do you have places that you are on the internet where you can be found? Do you want to be found on the internet?
If you don't find me, I find you.
It sounds like no.
They don't want pimps. Is that what I'm hearing?
I'll tell you what.
I do have
right
a
here in this podcast.
I do have a Gmail for my Mead stuff. If folks are curious about it, I'll try to actually pay attention to that account. I think it's kind of inactive. It's Meadfae, MEADFAE, at gmail.com.
Awesome.
I'm not selling online. Sorry, no. I don't want to get in trouble with the Georgia Alcohol Bureau. No, thank you.
Of course.
But if there are people curious, sure.
Can't do awesome. That.
Now, that said, though, thanks so much for having us on the show. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun for all of us.
No, this has been fun. I don't get to talk about this a lot, so it was goobing fun.
Exactly. But I'm interested where you guys are on the internet. This is my first time interacting with y'all.
Where are you at on the interwebs, Jen?
All right, you can find me at The Jen Says on Twitter, streaming at twitch.tv/TheJenPlays, and roadspillproductions.com is actually online now, and all the links to all the things are there. I actually did a stream too this week. Look at that. That's like 2 weeks in a row, guys. Like, this is really happening. The computer functions, the streams are happening. So,
as long as you don't mess up the technology.
As long as I don't, like, I didn't knock on all the wood like I caused earlier. No. All right. Sorry, Amber.
How about you, Amber?
It's okay. Jen's got a new computer. She's good for a long time now. I can be reached at 9 of 12. That's NINEOF12 on Twitter and Twitch. And you can hear me on the Part-Time Gamers podcast. Every other week, we do live stream at Caffeine-Induced TV, playing games for that cast.
And you can listen to me on the podcast, the Glitter Dice podcast, talk about women in gaming. You can also find me on Twitch under the name True Noob. It's TRUN00B. That's where I do my streaming for making my Pokemon plushies. So if you're interested in watching me crochet for a couple hours, come see me then. So thanks for listening, everyone. Good game.
Good game.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Happy moving.
And cheers.
If you enjoyed the show and have the quill skill to shriek speech, leave us a 5-star unique critique on iTunes or thrill us with the size of your handbill by spilling goodwill into our tills at patreon.com/grills. We can also be found windmilling around Facebook and YouTube at facebook.com/geekgrills and youtube.com/geekgrills, where we like to chill. Tweet your siren songs where the throngs belong on Twitter at geekgrills, where we're dressed to kill. For more info on the show, though, go to geekgrills.com, where you can find previous episodes, show notes, and current contest information. Send us your psalms and qualms to geekgrills@gmail.com or give us a ring at 508-474-5577, where we can hear your lovely voice sing the zing thing. Thanks for listening.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.